From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Museums are generally considered a societal good. They're places of appreciation and education. Through stories and artifacts, they foster understanding and connection across cultures and across time. But the way in which museums obtain some of their treasures has come under scrutiny in recent years. Historically, collection methods were often unsavory, and in some cases, we can just speak plainly and call it theft. Think Indiana Jones. That said, in the past few years, museums around the world have been experiencing a reckoning in the form of repatriation. That's the term of art for the return of borrowed or stolen items to the communities of origin. Repatriation can take many forms, from physical objects to human remains, which we really should be calling the ancestors of Native Americans. I should also note we're planning another conversation on this show in the near future, focusing specifically on the repatriation of Native American ancestral remains. But for today, we're focusing on the Illinois State Museum's recent return of artifacts to Kenya. Joining us now to talk more about this is Dr. Brooke Morgan. She's a PhD anthropologist and the curator of anthropology for the State Museum's Research and Collection Center. Dr. Morgan, welcome to the 21st Show.
Good morning. Thanks so much for having me today.
And listeners, you can join our conversation as ever at 800-222-9455. Have you ever thought about how artifacts you're looking at in museums were obtained and wondered about that? If you have questions, now's the time. 800-222-9455. Again, 800-222-9455. All right, Dr. Morgan, let's start with some background. Can you just tell us a little bit about what is Kikango?
So a Kigongo, or multiple of these statues, would be called Vigongo with a V. These are essentially wooden memorial posts that are carved specifically for an elder male who has died in the community and has been part of this special society called the Gohu Society, which basically reveres men for their wisdom and their power within the community. And so these special totems or statues would be carved specifically for them after they passed, and they would be erected in a homestead or the village. And so people viewed these as being the spirit of the ancestors who they could continue to commune with and ask favor from as they went about their daily lives.
These are sounds like objects that in our cultural tradition in America would be sort of memorial markers or something like that.
Yeah, that's right. The closest thing I could think of for our society would be like grave markers or headstones, although these didn't necessarily mark the locations of graves. But if you think about going and visiting your loved ones in a cemetery, you would visit with the plot. You would maybe bring them flowers or talk to them about how your life's going. You really feel a connection with that person, even though they've passed on.
And just, I know you mentioned it a little bit, but how, put these in the context of how important are Vigongo for the Migi Kenda people?
So they're really part and parcel of their daily lives and their spiritual lives too. So just because someone has passed does not necessarily mean that they're gone from the community. They're sort of embodied in these statues in the Vigongo. And so members of the community, both family members, but also the community at a larger scale, would visit with these statues, would leave offerings, would talk with them, would ask for rain if they needed rain, would ask the rain to stop if there was flooding, would ask for good health for their children, and all those sorts of things that, you know, we think of as essentially prayers to the ancestors to make sure that they had good fortune. And without those ancestors being in the community in the form of these statues, a lot of community members have said that they've fallen on hard times and have really experienced negative effects to their lives because of the loss of these statues.
Okay, so I'm sure smart listeners can see where we are going with this conversation. How did Vigongo come to be in the collection of the Illinois State Museum?
It's a great question, and it's not a very straightforward way, so I'll preface it by saying that. but essentially the museum took in a very large collection of African art in 2001 from another museum that had closed and could no longer care for the items in its collection. And this was primarily all African art objects, about 3,000 of them. And they were, as I said, collected or donated as art. And so a lot of times the context that they came from was poorly known or poorly documented. But these had originally been taken or stolen in the 1980s, late 1970s, and up to the mid 1980s from the Mijikenda communities on the coast of Kenya, and had been donated to this other museum, and then came to the Illinois State Museum in 2001. And so we took it upon ourselves to ensure that this collection was still cared for, even though, one of our primary missions is not necessarily African art, but we do have a large ethnographic collection that talks about and demonstrates life of people around the world in different cultures. So we saw it as a way to protect these items and make sure that they didn't get distributed or go out to the art market and get further split up into private collectors' hands or other, various museums. We wanted to keep the whole collection together. So that's essentially how they came to be at the Illinois State Museum.
I'm really surprised that you said this was in the 1980s, I think, because I think in our imagination, Indiana Jones is around World War II. We think of maybe people from the Teddy Roosevelt era doing this sort of thing. But is this still an ongoing problem? And how do you go about stealing something like this?
Absolutely, it's still a problem. And it really wasn't a problem until the 70s and 80s. These items were never necessarily seen as collectible until art dealers sort of created a demand for them in American and European markets. And so they are quite striking. They can be, up to 9 feet tall, carved from a single plank of wood. They're anthropomorphic or human form, and they have a round head with eyes and a mouth. They have all these beautiful geometric designs on them, but obviously they weren't created as art and were not supposed to be appreciated as art. One thing about the Vigongo life cycle is that if a family moves and if they move to a new village, move to a new homestead, they have to leave the Kigongo behind. So it's never supposed to be moved from where it's first put in place. That's it's supposed to disintegrate naturally in the environment. You can still visit with it. You can make a sort of a replica or a smaller version in your new homestead, but they're supposed to stay where they were placed. And folks who were not Mijikenda took this to mean that the items were abandoned. And so while they may be abandoned in the way that we think of it being abandoned, they were still considered living beings and still very important spiritually to the communities. So this thing is still happening. And one of the things that the communities are concerned about today is that if and when they get their Vigongo back, they're not really sure where to place them because they are concerned that they would be stolen again.
Interesting. Okay, let me take a moment to remind listeners this is the 21st show. We're speaking with Dr. Brooke Morgan, who is an anthropologist, curator of anthropology at the Illinois State Museum's Research and Collections Center. We're talking about the return of artifacts that have been inappropriately taken, stolen, you might say, over the years. Specifically in this case, it was artifacts from Kenya, and they are called Vigongo, analogous to what we might have as like a tombstone, although not necessarily marking a grave, as we were saying. So how does the museum discover, talk about the process of how does somebody first realize, oh, wait, this is not just a piece of art. This is a very important, a piece of someone's culture and spirituality, and this is something that should not be in our possession.
So this conversation's been going on for certainly a long time, since probably for about 20 years now, the early 2000s, and some anthropologists who are studying the Mijikenda and were aware of the the community's concerns that their vagongo were going missing and were stolen, they brought it to the museum's attention because they in particular found that one of the kigongo in our collection had been stolen. You know, there was documentary proof. There was actually a photograph of a gentleman with two vagongo who the researchers had been working with in 1985 or so. And, you know, they took a picture of him with his vagongo and then revisited him several months later. And just in that time between taking the picture and them visiting him again, the kigongo had, or actually both vagongo had gone missing. They were stolen. And so we know that they alerted us essentially that this, you know, this was taken. We know who it belongs to. We know the family. And so that was in 2006. And so the museum worked with the Kenyan government and the Kenyan National Museum to make sure that this one kigongo in particular in our collection got back to where it belonged. But there was always this lingering question of, okay, well, even though we don't know exactly what family or what community the other 37 vagongo came from, should they go back? Should they go to Kenya? And what's the process for that? So it's been a conversation for quite some time, and it's been gathering steam and gathering momentum from other institutions. And so it finally came to the point where we've worked with our colleagues in Kenya to come up with a plan for this large scale return that you know would not have been possible when that first repatriation happened in 2006.
Okay, so say more about that. How does that come about? How do these museums get together and decide who do you contact in Kenya to say, right? I mean, I don't know if you're finding the individual families or local governments, or how does that work?
Yeah, it's a challenge because we do have some information on the vagongo where they supposedly were collected, but we've also heard from researchers that might just have been where, you know, sort of the second or third stop on the way that they exited the country, and it might not be the origin place of where they were collected. And so it can be very difficult to try and interface with the communities or families individually. So actually our partnership is with the National Museums of Kenya, and they have been working since 2014 or so on getting vagongo back into, at least into the country, and then working directly with the county government there, which their counties are akin to our states. So they cover vast geographic areas, but working with county governments, working with the national government, and then working with the communities themselves in order to identify where these may have come from and get them back to the right place. So really, you know, it's going from museum to museum, but as museums, we are acting as sort of the interface between you know, the vagongo and the communities, and trying to facilitate the return. And now that they are at least in country, in Kenya, the national museums can work on the ground with their contacts to better figure out what should happen with the vagongo.
So you mentioned these are 9 feet tall. I understand they can be very heavy. They don't fit in the overhead bin, I assume. So what does it take to actually transport these to Kenya?
That was one of the most difficult things, was the logistics. So ours varied from about 3 feet tall to almost 7 feet tall. And as I said, we had 37 of them. So we actually worked with a shipping company out of Chicago that is familiar with packing and shipping art and other delicate items. And so we sent all the specifications to them, the length, width of the vagongo, and then also the weight, the individual weight of each of them. And they came up with four custom crates to hold all 37 of these. And they actually came to our research and collection center and packed them and got them into the four different crates. And then we were able to they actually flew from Chicago to Europe and then to Nairobi, where they were received by the national museums. So that was, it was a very nerve-wracking couple of weeks there as I, you know, as they got picked up here and then were waiting in Chicago for their flight. And then I was getting updates on the flight constantly, like, oh, the Vigongo are, you know, in Europe, the plane's refueling, and now they're in Nairobi and they've disembarked. And so I was kind of following their journey along as they went back to Nairobi.
We need to take a break in about 30 seconds here, but was there like a theft concern? I mean, is this sort of thing where you're being a little clandestine about transporting something this valuable?
Yeah, absolutely. And we also, we valued them at very like a nominal value for insurance purposes. We assigned them a value of $1 each. And so we were hoping that, you know, although they were insured for a higher value than that, they were certainly not valued that way for customs. So we were hoping that would deter any thievery.
Interesting. All right. We're going to take a break. When we come back, more with Dr. Brooke Morgan, anthropologist at the Illinois State Museum, about returning Vigongo to Kenya. She's just back from a trip. This is the 21st show. More to come. Stay with us. This is the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are speaking with Dr. Brooke Morgan, who is curator of anthropology at the Illinois State Museum, a PhD anthropologist. And she is just back from Kenya, where she returned some artifacts to people there. They are known as Vigongo, a way for people to, members of the Mijikenda people, to honor their ancestors. And they had come into the collection of the State Museum, we heard before the break, through a larger African art collection that the museum acquired when another museum was closing in the early 2000s, I should say. And these items have just been repatriated to Kenya. So I want to play a little sound from your trip before we continue. Let's take a listen to that. All right, Dr. Morgan, what are we hearing there?
So it was a little bit difficult for me to hear on my side, but I believe that was when the we were in the middle of the ceremony of return and there was dancing. Is that what was played?
Yes, I believe so. Yeah, yes.
Great. Yeah. So that was, we basically were all in the middle of this sacred forest that they had invited us to come into. This is the place where they do a lot of their rituals and ceremonies. But today it was, the public could come in and it was all about celebration of the return of the Vigongo. And so you hear a lot of singing and some you know, music as well. And so there were multiple dances going on at the same time. And we got pulled into the dances and as participants. And it was just a really joyful and celebratory atmosphere for the return of these ancestors.
What is that like for you personally, right? I mean, you worked on this elsewhere in America, and you've been through this sort of experience before, but you spent so much time working, I presume, in an office in Springfield on something like this, and then it all culminates in this ceremony. What is that like for you?
It's really indescribable. I mean, it's there's so many emotions going on. Of course, the joy of being able to see this to fruition, but then also just trying to remember to be in the moment and to experience what's going on with the celebration and just connecting with the community. A lot of them did not speak English, and I do not speak Kiswahili, so we basically communicated a lot just by dancing, just by smiling, just by, you know, sort of reveling in this very unforgettable moment with the communities at large. And so it was just a very amazing experience, but also one that it felt like it went by too quickly because it was just so incredible and such a moving experience.
So we're coming to the end of our time together, just a few minutes remaining. Maybe we can go bigger picture for this. So throughout history, as I mentioned at the beginning of our conversation, right, museums are educational, but more recently they're taking on this repatriation work. Can you just speak more broadly about that, specifically with regards to the Illinois State Museum, but generally as well, as to how museums are thinking about what is in their collections?
Right. Well, I think that museum collections are supposed to be dynamic. They are not supposed to be static in the sense of just we're going to accumulate these things and then they are just things that will be in collections. And yes, they will get studied and yes, they will go on exhibit. But overall, we don't really reflect on their origins too much or how they were acquired. I think that obviously there have been calls for that for a long, long time. And we're kind of getting to the point where this conversation is happening on the public level, which is fantastic. It's not just museum professionals having this conversation, but we see it play out and these really big discussions about what should or should not be held by museums happening by the public. I think that, as we move forward and reflect on what makes our collection and what, how those things were acquired and whose permission we may or may not have to have, items of their cultural heritage or even their ancestors, then a lot of things are going to change. And I think that museums should be ready for that change. The museum world is often slow to change, but I think that we're getting to a point where those changes have to happen, and they have to happen, in concert with and in consideration of the communities whose materials we hold.
Is it ethical to maintain? I mean, maybe the way to think of it is like, what percentage of the State Museum's collection would you say is potentially problematic?
Well, I think that that's something that we have to discuss and determine with the communities of origin. Certainly in the anthropology department, we are working hard with our tribal partners who are throughout the Midwest and the Great Plains now, but originally were in Illinois and were forcibly removed. So we're working with them to identify and repatriate their ancestral remains that are in our collection. And, we really hope to set new ethical standards of holding collections review not just human remains, but also other cultural materials that may be in our collection.
All right. Dr. Brooke Morgan, thank you so much for being with us today on the 21st Show.
Thanks for having me. It's been great.